Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and a warm welcome to Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn in Germany. I'm Mark Caldwell.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe from the Social Media Desk.
Coming up, UNICEF says almost 1.4 million children could die this year from famine in Nigeria, Somalia, South Sudan and Yemen.
If we don't treat an acutely malnourished child, there's a high likelihood that they will die. But if we can reach them with therapeutic support, they can recover almost fully.
And why some Zimbabweans doubt the wisdom of spending millions of dollars on celebrating President Robert Mugabe's 93rd birthday, which falls today.
We've got potholes across our city and many other cities that need to be dealt with. So if the government can fundraise millions, then those millions be dedicated to fixing up hospitals or providing books for schools or paying teachers their bonuses from last year.
And I'll be reading some of the comments that you've been posting on our Facebook page about the lavish Mugabe birthday bash.
But first, a roundup of major events around the globe.
I'm Christina Kripal with the DW News. Nearly 1.4 million children are at imminent risk of death from famines in Nigeria, Somalia, South Sudan and Yemen, the UN Children's Agency UNICEF said on Tuesday. Drought is one cause, but much of the catastrophe is man-made, Marixi Mercado, head of the media at UNICEF, told DW.
450,000 children could be severely malnourished this year in the conflict-affected states of the northeastern Nigeria. So are children victims of conflict, insecurity, insurgency? Yes, they are the ones that are paying the highest price for insecurity.
People are already starving to death in all four countries mentioned, and the UN agency World Food Programme says that more than 20 million lives are at risk in the next 6 months. Meanwhile, South Sudan's president Salva Kiir today promised aid agencies safe access to hunger-stricken civilians. His promise came a day after his government declared a famine in parts of the war-ravaged country. The United Nations and other organizations have long accused the government of blocking or restricting aid delivery in the East African nation. This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. Ghana's President Akufo-Addo addressed his country's parliament today for the first time since being sworn in. DW correspondent Isaac Kaleji reports from Accra on what Ghanaians can expect of the new president.
President Akufo-Addo was very clear about what his priorities will be.
We are going to have to implement some tough, prudent and innovative policies and rescue this economy.
Ghana's economy is currently unable to create jobs and support sustained energy generation. The IMF is helping out, but much depends on what the new government does to put the economy back on track.
European Union finance ministers agreed Tuesday to close loopholes that multinational firms use to pay low or no taxes. The new rules aim to prevent companies from exploiting disparities in tax rates, particularly in countries outside the bloc. The rules are due to take effect in 2020. The initiative comes amid growing public outrage about tax avoidance by multinational corporations. U.S. President Donald Trump has appointed Lieutenant General Herbert Raymond McMaster as his national security advisor. The 54-year-old is an expert in resistance control and was deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan. He succeeds Michael Flynn, who was forced out after less than a month because of questionable contacts with Russia. At least 74 migrants have drowned off the coast of Libya today. According to the aid organization Red Crescent, they died while attempting to cross the Mediterranean to reach Europe. An Israeli soldier who killed a wounded and incapacitated Palestinian assailant was sentenced to 18 months in prison on Tuesday. The sentence, perceived as overly lenient, drew Palestinian outrage. For more news and information, download the DW app from the Google Play stores or from iTunes. I'm Christina Kripal.
And you're listening to Africa Link with me, Mark Caldwell. The UN Children's Agency, UNICEF, said on Tuesday that nearly 1.4 million children were at imminent risk of death in famines in Nigeria, Somalia, South Sudan and Yemen. As many as 450,000 children are severely malnourished in northeastern Nigeria, which is suffering from a chronic insurgency. I've been talking to Mirexi Mercado, who is head of media for UNICEF. I asked her if there was one underlying reason why all these children were at risk, or was it a combination of factors that varied from country to country?
It's a little bit of both. I think all of these crises are largely man-made. But, for example, drought in Somalia is a huge factor.
Northeastern Nigeria has been hit by the Boko Haram insurgency. Would it be correct to call children in that region victims of the insurgency?
We estimate that up to 450,000 children could be severely malnourished this year in the conflict-affected states of the northeastern Nigeria. FuseNet, which is the early warning system that monitors food security, said that late last year, famine likely occurred in parts of Borno State. That right now, famine is likely ongoing in areas that are inaccessible to humanitarian organizations. So are children victims of conflict, insecurity, insurgency? Yes, they are the ones that are paying the highest price.
How big a problem is access to the children?
Access is an enormous problem in all of these countries because there's so much insecurity and so much fighting. In Yemen, for example, we've seen a 200% increase in the number of children who are severely malnourished since 2014 when the fighting started.
South Sudan is also a conflict zone, and famine has been declared in Unity State, where almost 20,000 children live. What is being done to try and save them?
UNICEF and our partners are working desperately to save children. The issue is this. If we don't treat an acutely malnourished child, there's a high likelihood that they will die. But if we can reach them with therapeutic support, they can recover almost fully. So the coming days, weeks, and months will be decisive.
What is the chief problem? What is stopping you from saving more children?
It's a combination of factors. Access is one issue. Funding is another issue. But ultimately, what these children need are political solutions to the issues that are affecting their countries.
Mirexi Mercado, head of media for UNICEF. Isaac.
Yes, Mark, indeed. And we've had some comments that people have been posting on our Facebook page about this story on malnutrition. Bello Ishaku from Gombe, Northern Nigeria, says UNICEF has to do everything possible to rescue children suffering with malnutrition before they die. Ivokum says as long as there is war in South Sudan, challenges like hunger will always be there. The warring parties should resolve their political differences and give the common man a life. Katende Charles Peter from Uganda says Sudanese themselves should get more involved in agricultural activities because they are now currently flowing to Uganda where there is also hunger, although it has not been officially declared. Please keep on sending those messages on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Back to you, Mark.
Isaac, many thanks. US President Donald Trump has named a new national security advisor after his first choice for the job was forced to resign and his second choice turned it down. The new national security advisor is Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster. More details now from Ollie Tanjan Jr.
Lieutenant General H.R. McMaster is a career soldier who commanded troops in both American wars in Iraq. He fought in a tank battle known as the Battle of 73 Easting in 1991 and was engaged in combating the counterinsurgency after the U.S.-led invasion in 2003. The 54-year-old, who has a degree in history, is also known for a highly critical book on the U.S. government's handling of the Vietnam War, arguably the biggest trauma for America in the second half of the 20th century. It appears that McMaster holds a much more pessimistic view of Moscow's contemporary ambitions than Trump himself. He said one of Moscow's broader goals was the replacement of the political order in Europe with something more sympathetic to Russian interests. McMaster is one of several Trump officials who have been plucked from the military.
Ole Tanjan Jr. Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe turned 93 today. A lavish birthday party to celebrate the occasion is to be held this coming Saturday at a cost of $2 million. Now, Zimbabwe is suffering from a multitude of problems, including a cash shortage, and critics say the money for the birthday party should be spent on other things. But as DW's Columbus Mafunga reports, all is set for the celebrations.
This year's birthday bash for President Robert Mugabe will take place on Saturday in Matopos, about 600 kilometers southwest of Harare. Hundreds of thousands of Zimbabweans are expected to attend. Kudzai Chipanga, a senior member of Mugabe's ZANU-PF party, said for the celebration, a huge cake weighing more than 90 kgs has been baked and 150 cattle will be slaughtered.
We regard President Mugabe's birthday so highly to an extent that we take President Mugabe as second to Jesus Christ. So his birthday is something which we cannot miss, which we cannot afford to miss as Zimbabweans.
Mugabe, widely seen as a tyrant, his policies have also plunged Zimbabwe into a political crisis after he was confirmed as the sole candidate for his ZANU-PF party for the next presidential election in 2018 when he will be 94. But he says he's ready to carry on the mantle.
I came from the people, and the people, in their wisdom, are members of the party, will certainly select someone once I say, well, I'm now retiring, but not yet. At this age, I still can go some distance, can't I?
Mugabe has been ruling Zimbabwe since 1980, when the country got its independence from Great Britain. Since then, Zimbabwe has religiously celebrated his birthday. This year, a coalition of civic organizations called 21 Days of Activism Zimbabwe told DW that Mugabe should not celebrate his birthday. Sam Farai Monro is one of the activists in the anti-birthday movement.
We've got potholes across our city and many other cities that need to be dealt with. So if the government can fundraise millions, then let those millions be dedicated to fixing up hospitals or providing books for schools or paying teachers their bonuses from last year.
Yesterday, the European Union voted to extend by 1 year economic sanctions against President Mugabe. The Western governments began imposing sanctions on Harare in 2002 over allegations of electoral fraud and human rights abuses.
Columbus Mavunga reporting from Harare, and I'm sure that story about Mugabe's annual lavish birthday party has once again set people talking on social media, Isaac.
That's true indeed, Mark, and right now even on our Facebook page is being jammed by comments about this lavish party. Anyway, to begin with, Abakar Ahmed Rotan says, it's just waste of resources. It is just unbelievable. Why spending such amount to celebrate just a mere birthday? What for? Hope the people of Zimbabwe would wake up against wasting resources. People are dying because of hunger, no medical care in the hospitals, no safe water to drink. May Almighty save us from, the leaders, our leaders, because they're just looters and not leaders. David Kine Roland said, why should Mugabe do such a thing to a poor country like Zimbabwe and not solve problems of poverty affecting the ordinary people? Splashing money lavishly for a birthday party should be regarded a criminal act. Kwasi Blackman says, why would Mugabe spend that much when we have many citizens lacking social amenities? And Tan from Sylvester says, that's Africa for you. Paul Bia spends more than that even on birthday celebrations, yet Cameroonians are dying of malaria, no hospitals, zero infrastructure, and the list continues. What a pity. Njome, also from Cameroon, says, talk about Southern Cameroon. That's the major problem Africa has now, but all the media houses are shy to talk about it. I wonder if Bia goes around bribing media houses. This is in relation to the corruption that goes on between the two countries. Dele Feteye Terence says what Mr. Mugabe and his cohorts are doing can only be done in Zimbabwe. West Africa wouldn't tolerate him. On Twitter, we have other comments, like from Bashir Ishak Mustafa says, with the renewed sanctions, surely this is not the right thing that Mugabe ought to be doing. And then Dems Marong says, the $2 million would have been distributed to ordinary Zimbabweans. Mark, back to you.
You're listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Deutsche Welle in Bonn, Germany. You're listening to Africa Link with me, Mark Caldwell. Coming up, campaigning against corruption in Liberia.
We have to go through the court system and all of these different systems, and they all get compromised somewhere along the way. And it has been very, very difficult for us to win a case of corruption in Liberia.
More on that story in a moment. But first, South Sudanese President Salva Kiir pledged on Tuesday to give humanitarian agencies unimpeded access to crisis areas after a famine was declared in parts of the country. Kiir made the promise after the United Nations had complained that the army was preventing it from accessing displaced people in the north of South Sudan. Kiir also told Parliament that the implementation of a national dialogue plan was a top priority for the government. Here's Wakil Simon Wudu in Juba.
President Salva Kiir said the National Dialogue Initiative is a move aimed at uniting South Sudanese, but not a political game, as some people have alleged in recent days.
The National Dialogue Initiative we have rolled out is not a trick, a delaying tactic or a calculated strategy by the government to consolidate its grip on power. As anti-peace elements always claim, we are not in the business of playing tactics or tricks. We are a government and our business is to work for the unity of the people of South Sudan, protect the sovereignty and territorial integrity of this land, and to uphold our constitution and international obligations.
Kiir was speaking to lawmakers, cabinet ministers and diplomats at the opening of parliament. Kiir acknowledged that South Sudan has been hit by a severe drought and that his government would ensure that aid agencies reach people who are in need of emergency food aid.
The government will ensure that all humanitarian and development organizations have unimpeded access to the needy populations across the country.
Despite aid agencies sounding the alarm bells on the famine that threatens to kill thousands of children who are suffering from severe malnutrition, President Salva Kiir reiterated that his government will do whatever it can to ensure that, together with the agencies, which include UNICEF, they can avert the rather dire situation.
The government is aware of the failure of crops last year in the region, and so steps are being taken to mitigate a potential famine in that area. Towards this end, the government will increase the supply of basic food commodities in the area with the provision for subsidized prices.
Other priorities that Salva Kiir spoke about during his address include the implementation of the peace agreement, reviving the collapsed economy, and mending the broken relations with the international community, which he says have not been good for the last 3 years.
Wahisam Wudu in Juba.
Africa on the move.
We head now to Liberia, where President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf admitted last month that her administration had fallen short in its fight against corruption, which she described as public enemy number one. Not everybody, though, is prepared to concede defeat in the struggle against graft. And in this week's Africa on the Move, we meet a tireless Liberian anti-corruption activist. Here's Jane Yeko-Kurt with a report by Daniel Hirschfeld. Liberia.
It is 8 o'clock in the morning in Liberia's capital, Monrovia. Jonas Ndama is a guest in a live show of Radio Maria. His anti-corruption organization, Sental, recently uncovered a corruption scheme in the education system. The 28-year-old alleges that a number of teachers stole money intended for buying school books. Dama uses radio as a platform to reach a bigger audience.
It is important because the public depends on us a lot. There's a lot that is expected of our work by the public. So we always try our best to share the result of our works, our findings, our research, the findings of our research to the public.
Most of the residents going about their daily businesses have made it a habit of tuning into the program. Issues discussed range from corruption to politics. After hearing about the teachers' corruption scandal, some Monrovians are keen to give their views.
We are the common people. We would benefit from the resources that this country has. For all the resources that this country has, we cannot see it because of the corruption.
Every part of Liberia is being affected by corruption. The public sector and the private sector.
Jonathan Dama says he hears such complaints almost every day. Using the radio show, he wants to tell people that only they themselves can spearhead the change they want to see.
It reaches people that don't have access to social media. So it opens up a bigger land space. We have a great reception from the public. They come up and they volunteer their times. They give us their time and energy.
And without volunteers, Dama and his colleagues at Central Organization would be fighting a losing battle. The activist likens his work to a fight between David and Goliath. Sometimes, he says, they unearth corruption cases and offenders go unpunished.
They all get compromised somewhere along the way. And it has been very, very difficult for us to win a case of corruption in Liberia.
Central has just started an official investigation in the collapse of the state oil company. They had also vowed to look into a current standoff between Liberia University students and the management after the latter planned to increase tuition fees.
What will be done with the money that is expected to come from the students? What improvements we expect to see? For example, the institution lacks a functional library. They don't have computer labs.
But for now, the case seems to be closed after President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf ordered the tuition fees to remain the same.
That report was written by Daniel Hirschfeld.
Focus Europe.
On Focus Europe, we visit the Netherlands. Geert Wilders is a Dutch politician. He leads the far-right Freedom Party, which is anti-European Union, anti-Islam and anti-migrants. The party is riding high in the opinion polls, and one place where the party is expected to do well in elections next month is the picturesque village of Volendam. It's popular with tourists looking for an authentic Dutch setting for their vacation. Lauren Fryer has been finding out why Geert Wilders is so popular there.
If you book a tour of old-fashioned Holland, the guide will likely take you to Volendam, a picturesque village with cobblestone streets, tulips, and seagulls pecking at fish on the pier. From a kiosk, a little old lady in a white apron sells the local delicacy, smoked eels.
Mackerels.
45 years in business, and not much has changed in prosperous Volendam, with its waterfront homes and sailboats. There's almost full employment here and very few immigrants. About a dozen people I stopped on the street here all described their town in the same way.
People here work hard and say nothing else.
Hard-working people who've lived here for generations, they say. And they have something else in common. Theo Sterk, who owns a local fish canning factory, says he and almost all of his neighbors quietly support the far-right politician Geert Wilders.
They talk about it with people they know, but they don't publish it. Geert, he says things with a lot of Dutch people think. Yes, that's a good thing.
Geert Wilders wants to ban Muslim immigration and pull out of the European Union. It's a bit of a contradiction for the Dutch, who've long defined themselves as open to the world. Naval explorers, international bankers. Holland took in Jews after the Spanish Inquisition. The world's largest Muslim country, Indonesia, used to be a Dutch colony. But globalization has gone too far, says Sterk, the fish factory owner.
The Netherlands economy is founded on different people from the Middle Ages. But if you allow them to come in your country, you must ask them to fit in our society and to do the same things as we are doing.
At the Volendam soccer field, coach Wim Krokman says he supports banning immigration because the Netherlands, with just 17 million people, is already one of the most densely populated countries in Europe.
You see all the fugitives who are coming by boats to Italy, to Turkey. They are looking for jobs, are looking for houses. And there's only one man in Holland who says, take care, in 10 years we have a problem. And we think he's right.
That one man, Geert Wilders. In his political speeches, Wilders invokes nostalgia for places like Volendam, for the traditional Holland the tourists come to see. But Dutch people rarely wear wooden clogs anymore. And that old Dutch identity the far right likes to play up may be mostly imaginary, says Bulent Oosterk, one of the soccer dads on the field. He's actually from an immigrant family.
Holland doesn't really have an identity. You know, when you're talking about Dutch characteristics, you could also speak about a German or a Danish identity because they're the same, almost the same.
In those countries too, just like in Little Volendam, there's an increasingly vocal nostalgia for a white Christian past. Geert Wilders is riding that sentiment and is forecast to win the most votes in Holland's election this March.
Lauren Freyer reporting. And in a related topic, today is International Mother Language Day, and its purpose is to promote linguistic and cultural diversity. And I understand, Isaac, that we've been observing this occasion here on Africa Link, haven't we?
Sure, indeed. And one of our colleagues, DW Celia Frolish, went around asking, you know, some of the journalists working at DW, to tell her what it means to them when you talk about the mother tongue. And now, let's listen to what they told her.
For me, it is the language that I grew up hearing, learning, listening from my people, from the place there where I was born.
It's important for me because it's helping me to make a quiet communication with all members of my families, our communities.
Mother language means me the only way to express my feelings, my deepest feelings. With no other language, I'm able to do it.
Those are the voices of some of DW's journalists speaking to our own Celia Frolish what mother language meant to them. And as if that was not enough, they also told her how they say hello or good morning in their mother tongue.
Hujambo.
Mwaramutse.
Bite.
So pecher.
Habari za asubuhi.
And what have our Facebook fans been saying about the day?
Well, there are some comments from both Facebook and Twitter. Al-Hassani Idrisu says, I believe the day is only observed in Germany or Europe, but not in Africa. We have heard of Mother's Day, Valentine's Day, and many other days as observed by the world. Today, it's my first day of hearing the Mother Language Day. Technology is gradually killing our local languages. We are using smartphones, which are only good for the Western languages. He says, I speak Dagbani, a language from northern part of Ghana, of which most of the language characters or letters are not on our device keys. It is very difficult to chat or write with friends. Well, Al-Hassan Idrisu, I wrote back to you and just reminded you that the day was first observed in the year 2000, after, of course, getting approval from the United Nations General Assembly. Please visit the page. You'll see the moderated comment from our team of Facebook. Anyway, to continue with the comments, Abdul Aziz Adam, he says he's proud to be a Fulani man. Fulfude, he says, is my mother language, and I'm from Gombe State in Nigeria. Jamil Issa wrote on our Facebook page also, and he said, we are waiting for domestic Mother Language Day. Whatever he meant, he will need to do some explanation again on the page. Lidwan Alba says, we're supposed to use our mother language in schools in order to show that we are respecting our mother tongue. And if I can read some of the live comments here on Twitter, one who goes by the name of London Alba says, African leaders should enforce and make sure that mother tongues are respected in all the education systems across Africa. And another comment from Ishaku again, he says, well, it's always good to respect our languages and Mother tongue is the way to go. Back to you, Mark.
Many thanks, Isaac. Our main stories before we leave you. UNICEF says that 1.4 million children in four countries, three of them in sub-Saharan Africa, could die from famine this year. US President Donald Trump has selected a new national security advisor, and Zimbabwe's President Robert Mugabe turned 93 today. Then we end this edition of Africa Link. From me, Mark Caldwell.
And me, Isaac Mugabe.
Bye now.